Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership. Let's
come aboard. Man, I'm doing
great. I'm doing great.
Happy Monday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
That's all that really matters as we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Randy Mueller is going to join us coming up in 20 minutes. Former NFL Executive of the Year. He's been a GM multiple places around the NFL. Now he is an NFL analyst. He's going to join us coming up here on the show in 20 minutes. Yesterday, the big game of the day, obviously, was the Bucks and the Packers. It turned out to be a dud. What a performance by the Bucks! Specifically, what a performance by the Bucks D. And early in this game, the Green Bay Packers were rolling. Aaron Rodgers had gotten into the end zone on that scramble. He had done the Aaron McKringleberry K.N. Peele celebration with the hip thrust. Everything seemed to be going well with a 10-0 lead. And then at the beginning of the second quarter, the pick six happened and it flipped everything.
Jamal Williams in the backfield. Rodgers takes the snap, 3rd and 10, drops, pressure coming, gets the pass. It's intercepted, picked off down the sideline, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown Tampa Bay! Touchdown Buccaneers, Jamal Dean! First turnover of the season by the Pack, and it's a pick six.
That was, of course, Gene Deckerhoff on Box Radio. Tampa Bay 38, Green Bay 10. I will readily admit, I did not believe in the Buccaneers' defense coming into the season. I thought that what happened in the second half of last year was overrated and overhyped. I thought that this year the Buccaneers' defense was going to be fine, slightly improved, but nothing to write home about. Certainly nothing that could be the backbone of winning games individually. And yesterday certainly proved me wrong. The Packers came into that game with one of the best offenses, if not the best offense in football, certainly the best offense in the NFC, and had a 10-0 lead. And the Bucs defense single-handedly changed the game. That Dean pick six flipped the momentum, and from there on out, the pass rush of the Bucs was relentless. They never stopped hitting Aaron Rodgers. They never stopped closing all the gaps in the side or in the field. They never stopped harassing the receivers of the Packers and giving them no space, and never stopped collapsing at the line of scrimmage on Aaron Jones and the rest of the ground attack for the Packers. They made life a living hell on Green Bay's backfield. A living hell. Rodgers never had any time. They were aggressive. They came in waves. I thought they called a really good game too, mixing in blitzes. And the Buccaneers defense was absolutely tip-top phenomenal after that early 10-0 deficit. And if that is the Buccaneers' defense's potential, right there, being able to single-handedly flip the script of a game against a Hall of Fame quarterback that had not thrown an INT this season. He had 13 touchdowns and zero INTs going into yesterday, and then threw a pick six, which changed everything, and then another interception after that. That the Buccaneers defense, yes, is good enough to help carry Tampa Bay. And I didn't believe it up until this one. Because let's face it, the Bucs' wins have been relatively mediocre opponents. Their losses against the Saints and the Bears, you know, the Saints have had a tough time getting all engines in sync. And the Bears are the Bears. I mean, they're winning, but are they very good? I did not believe in the Bucs defense until yesterday. That was a true challenge, and they rose to the challenge. And I've got a real concern about what I saw from the Packers yesterday, because it was reminiscent of the NFC title game in San Francisco, where the Packers emotionally were taken out of it way too easily. Now, Aaron Rodgers after the game said, "This will be good for us. We'll learn from this. We needed to be humbled a little bit." But I have to look at Aaron Rodgers and say, well, did you need to be humbled? Because weren't you the guy in the end zone thrusting his pelvis in a very funny celebration, by the way, which I loved, but it's the first quarter of a huge game. And you're the one in the end zone celebrating like you've got it all figured out. And then after the game, you're saying, hey, we need a little humility here. I love Rodgers. I've loved watching his career. I feel very lucky to be able to say, man, I was able to watch the entirety of this guy's career and all of the great moments and all of the great Hail Marys and the Super Bowl run and the multiple NFC Championship game runs. It's been a real delight to watch him. But there are moments where he can go into the bag. And yesterday was one of those moments. The Bucs defense was phenomenal. But how many of us, when it was 14-10 Bucs, were like, okay, here's the Rodgers drive. Here's his answer. All right, 21-10. But here, this is where Rodgers... big drive. You know, Troy Aikman yesterday said, this is a big drive for the Packers, like five different times. And they kept punting it away, or turning the football over, or just doing nothing with it. 21-10. Okay, you know what? Only down two scores. This is Rodgers' drive right here. This is where Rodgers looks like Rodgers. All right, 28-10. Okay. But coming out third quarter, he's going to get the ball back. Here he goes. All right, 31-10. You know, just need a couple of drives. Get something going. Maybe get a field goal on the board. Start field. And it was like every drive sucked more life out of him. And this is what really good defenses do. They do this to quarterbacks. But it felt like the NFC Championship game, where it was Rodgers and the team went in the bag quickly. And the guy on the other sideline, while he's 43 years old, and while he's no longer 33 or 23, is just not going to have a game where you get blown out by 28 points and never mounts even a decent drive in the second half of the game. You know, there's going to be a moment in there, and I'm not saying that Brady is perfect, because look, in the AFC wild card game against the Titans, he stunk, and there's plenty of moments where you can say, well, Brady's shown that he doesn't quite have that anymore. I just think that if Brady and the Bucs are down 21-10 against the Packers yesterday, Brady goes, no, this is a bleep you drive. We have to get down the field right here. We have to score to at least make this a game. And Brady's had some ugly moments. I mean, he was no good against the Bears. He was no good against the Saints this year. But I just feel like yesterday there was this door that was open continuously for Rodgers to just answer the bell, and the Packers offense, which was so dazzling for 5 weeks, to just have a, no, no, no. Stop the presses right now. We're going to answer. This is where a great offense answers and at least puts some pressure on the Bucks to have to, you know, have to get that next drive. Because let's just say it's 21-10 yesterday. And the Packers string together a drive, hit a big play or two, score a touchdown. Now it's 21-17. Well, now you force the hand of the Bucks to not go three and out, because you don't want to just give me the football back as Aaron Rodgers of this offense if now I'm only down four and I get right back on the field. The Packers never did that. They never flipped the script, and it was too easy for the script to be flipped on them. They're up 10-0, and Rodgers throws an errant pass. I mean, look, it's a great play by Dean, but it's also a supremely dangerous throw to make on the outside there, up 10 points. Rodgers throws it. It's back the other way. And in that one moment, it was like everything flipped. And then Rodgers throws the other interception. And I mean, God willing, stay out of the way. Don't try to make the tackle. I mean, he does, which I give him credit. But worst case scenario, you get injured on trying to make the tackle. That's one thing where Brady runs the other way, says, I'm not going to have anything to do with making a tackle on an INT. The Packers could not answer any of the waves the Buccaneers brought at them, and that worries me about what I saw from Green Bay. Are they just front runners where when things are going easy, man, it goes real easy and we just splinter the opponent? Or when you play a great opponent or a great defense in this case, do you land blow for blow? Do you have the ability to be in a title heavyweight bout? Because yesterday it didn't seem that way. And in the NFC Championship game, it didn't seem that way. And that bothers me about the Packers, because I think they should be better than that. And I think Rodgers should be better than that. And let me say this about the Buccaneers. Lest you think that I will never give Tom Brady any credit, I want this on record. Brady made two throws yesterday that were absolutely brilliant throws for 43 years old or 33 years old. The first one is the Tyler Johnson touchdown. The Bucs are up 14-10, okay? And they're inside the 10-yard line. There's a low snap down to his left. Brady can sit on that. Just eat it. They can kick a field goal, and they're up 7. Brady goes low and away to pick it up like a catcher trying to get a wild pitch. Steadies himself, looks left, has Tyler Johnson, zips it in there, touchdown. Settling for a field goal there versus getting 7 when that snap was nowhere near where it needed to be was a big-time play by Brady. Keeping his wits about him, hitting his man. And then at the end of the half, it's 21-10. Again, it's still just a touchdown field goal game if he could get the two-point conversion for the Packers. And from the 12-yard line, that throw to Gronk is a thing of beauty. I know they've done that a million times. I know he trusts Gronk. It's a great catch by Gronk to also get 2 feet in bounds. But that throw is awesome. That throw from Brady is awesome at 43 or any age. And that breaks the game open. That's the game. So here are two throws that define the game for Aaron Rodgers. A pick six and then the other INT, which sets up the short field. And then there's two throws for touchdowns by Tom Brady. Hey, advantage Brady right there. Yesterday, last night, Bucs defense was phenomenal, but that was advantage Brady yesterday. Mraz, do you believe in the Buccaneers defense more today than you did going into yesterday's game?
How do you not? When you answer the bell like that versus that kind of offense, and really, as we pointed out at the beginning of the show, and you just pointed out, Will the Packers into submission in Aaron Rodgers? I mean, make Aaron Rodgers basically look like he didn't even want to fight his way back in the second half because the pass rush was so relentless. This is what we've been waiting for the Bucs, because you know as well and as good as Tom Brady played yesterday, you cannot rely on that all season at his age for him to shine like that and dial it back the way he did. It has to be a defensive first team that sets up the field position for Tom Brady. And they did that. I am way more confident in the Bucs because of the opponent they played and the way they handled it and the way they went about their business, of course. The Tampa Bay defense looked legitimate yesterday.
Bucs defense had 5 sacks yesterday in that game. And I was annoyed. I was annoyed that this was the game that was supposed to be the game of the year. Obviously, the networks thought enough of it to where Fox didn't have anything on against it, and CBS really didn't want to put anything against it either. It was only the Jets and Dolphins late, and so the entire country is getting Brady versus Rodgers and Buccaneers versus Packers, and maybe this is a playoff preview. And then, you know, down 10-0 after those two picks, Rodgers went into the tank, and this is a future Hall of Famer in a huge spot, and they were 5-0 or 4-0. And I'm like, where is the battle? Where's just the one drive to put the pressure on the Buccaneers to have to answer? It was like after those two picks, all of his confidence was sucked right out of him.
I really, really felt down 18 at the half. To me, 18 to an Aaron Rodgers Packer team should not be a big deal. That's not the same as the Atlanta Falcons or the Minnesota Vikings going down 18. When they went to the half, I said, you know what? It's 18. This has been a weird half. We're going to get some Rodgers magic here. And even if they don't win, this is going to be a crazy entertaining second half. And you got the feel, I would say, within 4 minutes of that second half starting, that the Packers and Aaron Rodgers basically had zero interest
in
adjusting anything and fighting back into that game. Yeah. It was as if Aaron Rodgers said, I'm just not going to get hurt this second half. We'll punt and play for next week. Even down 28 to be in the fourth quarter, they're punting. They're punting from their own territory, and you know, from their own 40. Show some will that you at least care. Because if you're not caring, why the heck are any of us watching that game in midway third quarter, fourth quarter?
It was so over. Midway through the third quarter, it was so over. There was lifeless, no-pulse Packers. And compare that to the celebration he did in the end zone when he scores what he thought was the touchdown. It felt like a different decade that had happened.
Yeah.
And that also worries me because what Rodgers is going to ride into this game, have all this bravado. He's going to score a touchdown and do this dance. And then within like 12 minutes of gameplay is suddenly just going to be like, I quit. I'm not interested in winning this football game. It was like, that's how easy you can go from thrusting your pelvis in the end zone to I don't want to play anymore.
Right, with the country watching versus a guy who's basically willing his body to play at 43 years old, a guy who you should be shooting for in Tom Brady, to wilt like that and have no fight back. I'm sorry. I know Aaron Rodgers is an all-time great. He's going to be, like you said, treat to watch. That, to me, is just another blemish on Aaron Rodgers that, you know, when the going gets tough, that's a guy who kind of folds up pretty quickly.
It pains me to say this because I love Rodgers. I really have loved watching Aaron Rodgers play, and I love the fact that they're good again, and I love that he's still doing this because I don't want the Rodgers career to end yet. I'm having too much fun still watching it. But yesterday was so disappointing because it was like we had built this whole thing up, and there were multiple chances for him to measure up, multiple chances. It wasn't like this was 42-10 in, you know, the second quarter. It was like you had a 10-0 lead. You had found something that had worked early, and you got hit too much, or you threw the two picks, and it was like game is over, day is over. That's that. And I'm like, come on. Rodgers is better than what we saw yesterday, and the Packers are better than what we saw yesterday, and they just got bullied. And it's just disappointing that was it. Just tail between the legs. You're just going to go home now. Okay. All right. Well, score one for the Bucks. Score one for Brady, because that was an impressive effort then. When we come back, we'll talk to former NFL Executive of the Year, Randy Mueller, about all of this on the DA Show next. This is CBS Sports Radio.
The way sports talk was meant to be, on an imaginary spaceship.
Shout out to my boy, Skinny Fat, Mraz, love you. Follow both of you guys on Instagram.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate you dropping on by. Speaking of the IG, you want to follow me on Instagram, at Damon Amendo. I post a feel-good, good mojo picture of the day every day, usually a retro sports photograph, but something to make you smile in honor of our friend Little Mo. So you can follow me on Instagram there, at Damon Amendo. Appreciate you being with us. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. Our next guest is a former NFL Executive of the Year with the New Orleans Saints. He has also been the GM for the Miami Dolphins as well. He's worked with the front office of the Chargers and Seahawks. He joins us this morning here on the show, our friend Randy Mueller. Randy, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Damon. Good to be with you on a Monday morning.
You got it, buddy. Thanks so much for joining us. And we start with the big one yesterday with the Packers and the Bucks. What did you read about the game when you saw how dramatically it had flipped after that pick six? What did that tell you about both teams?
Well, I think what it did tell me was that Todd Bowles has some things figured out. I think games can change on a dime, and obviously it's easy to talk about the turnovers, and I agree with you, but they had a really good plan on defense, Tampa Bay did. I just felt like it becomes a third down matchup game for the most part, and they did a better job than the Packers did figuring things out on third downs. They anticipated better. They were very prepared. I do think there was something to the effect that the Packers needed a little kick in the butt and got it. Maybe this will help them down the road. But I think you're looking at a Tampa Bay defense that maybe not the monsters of the midway, but they've Todd Bowles has done a really good job. They're coming together. I think you're going to see a team that even gets better the further we go into the season. They're all clicking on the same page. And I like Tampa Bay's chances going forward, especially in a division that's, and we're finding out, isn't maybe as tough as we thought it was when the season started.
Did Aaron Rodgers and the Packers offense going to sleep and being non-competitive in the second, third, and fourth quarters worry you about their chances, or just a bad day for a really good offense and good quarterback?
Yeah, I think they just were off, and I can't really put my finger on it. They just seemed listless, but sometimes Aaron Rodgers is like that. You know, he might. He sometimes just gives you that feel of disinterest, you know, and his body language sometimes can be negative. Those are things that would concern me, but I also know what he's capable of. And I don't think it's a big lightning rod for the future, but I do think they've got to figure out a way to combat blitzes, especially protections. You know, like I said, it's a copycat league, and other teams are going to figure this out, what Tampa Bay did. Just from a blitz standpoint, they really confused Aaron Rodgers. So I think it's a good sharpening tool for them going forward. I still like the Packers' chances at the end of the day, but I just don't like the negativity sometimes that Aaron gives you that vibe of, oh boy, it's one of those days. And definitely Tampa had their way with him.
Yep, the body language would suggest that Aaron Rodgers was feeling like, oh, one of those days, and they kind of packed it in. You do a really cool news and notes article, a weekly piece at your website, and one of the entries this week was about the Patriots offense and whether or not New England style of offense run first with Cam Newton was sustainable. Well, what we saw yesterday was the worst effort so far of the season, and Cam Newton through the air was not very good, and the Patriots end up losing to the Broncos at home. Was that a red flag to you that, no, the Patriots offense is not sustainable that way early for the rest of the season?
Well, I think twofold. And first off, I appreciate you mentioning the website. And yeah, that was something I looked at last week. I've always felt like the Patriots would be a good fit for him, and I was very positive about him being there and still am. But when you have a quarterback-based run game like they have, and not many weapons on the outside on the perimeter, I just think your ability to adjust is limited, and I think we found that out. But also the combination of three practices in a 16-day stretch in our world of COVID, that had to have an effect on the Patriots too. So I'm not ready to hit the panic button because of all the adjustments they've had to make, but I do think Josh McDaniels is really challenged because we aren't even at the halfway point yet. Teams do figure out, and your options are limited. Again, when you don't have ways to spread the field. And I will say this, Cam looked rusty yesterday. He looked, talk about looking off a little bit. He just looked like he didn't have anything in his arm. He just didn't look like he had any zip at all. They had one or two explosive plays. But that's going to bear watching, I think, over the next couple of weeks, is how their offense evolves. Because 16 weeks is a long time, and you do have to evolve during the season. And you have to make changes and adjustments because defensive coaches are just too good. I thought yesterday was a little bit of an indicator of that.
Former NFL Executive of the Year, Randy Mueller, joins us this morning on the show. That website is MuellerFootball.com. You worked for the Miami Dolphins. You were their GM for a number of seasons. And yesterday, the Dolphins just whip up on the New York Jets. When you are a Jets organization and you are going through this type of darkness and every week feels like it's another humiliation, do you have to get rid of the head coach? Or do you know that even if you do, it doesn't really change much? And so you want to just kind of steer this for the rest of the season as it is. What do you do as a GM or a front office?
It's a good point you bring up, Damon, because I thought about this actually this morning. I don't know that it does them a lot of good to make changes with Adam Gase. I mean, he's trying. He's doing everything he knows he's been empowered to do. I don't see a roster that's gotten any better at all the last couple seasons, minus the tackle. The left tackle, Becton, has been a good addition. But they've made some errors in how to build the team. They've let certain talent go. I don't know what's going to change, but I don't think six games is a big enough body of work to start, weeding out coaches. And I don't know who you put in charge there anyway. So I think Jet fans are in for a long season regardless. I think they may end up just having to ride it out with the people they have as decision makers. Let's face it, it's not pretty. It's probably not going to get any better. But I think you might see a team that kind of galvanizes together. It can't get much worse. So eventually these players backed into a corner are going to have to start to produce as well. Let's face it, there's plenty of blame to go around in Jets land. I mean, their plan has not worked, and this is two seasons in a row. It's been a struggle for them. Actually, you can even go back further than that, but we'll just stay on the present time. And so we'll see. I'm kind of leaning toward the idea of maybe we don't make any changes and just ride this thing out, as crazy as that sounds.
What was the biggest head-scratcher for you in the way that this roster was assembled? You're a guy that has so much experience with roster building. What was the one that left you scratching your head most?
Well, I think the ones that get the biggest publicity are the trades and the Jamal Adams moving on to Seattle. Everybody said they grabbed a ransom for letting him go, but they're going to have to wait 2 or 3 years to feel the repercussions of that. They're not going to be able to back him up and fill in that void in the next year or so. So it's just going to take a long road to get back to where they are. My theory has always been, I want to keep as many good players as I can. I don't really care what position they play. Good players are hard to get. And when you get them, you need to find a way to keep them and then keep adding to it. I would like to have seen them add to this roster, not by deduction, try to build this team. I just think that's hard. You end up spinning your wheels and not getting enough players all around to make a difference. And difference makers, like I said, sometimes you underestimate them until you don't have them.
More big leads lost yesterday. We saw a 21-point lead by the Bengals dissipate. Colts come roaring all the way back. Yet again, a 16-point lead or more in the NFL, which just goes away in the blink of an eye. Why do you think that this year has lent itself to so many big comebacks around the NFL?
Yeah, it's really hard to put your finger on that. I felt early on that the offenses were way ahead. I felt like some defenses are coming around now because there's film to watch. You know, we've got 5 or 6 games now on tape, so coaches can make adjustments. I just don't – I really can't put my finger on the way these teams come back now. I do think that mistakes, teams start slow, and it is a long game, and they find ways, like in the Colts situation yesterday, they were behind 21-0 before they even knew what was going on. They just kind of found a way to grind themselves back into it. Talent eventually shows at the end of the day. The team usually that plays the best is going to win the game. I felt like these turnovers that put you behind the eight ball sometimes can be overcome now with really no disadvantages on the road. It's not as hard to come back on the road anymore. You know, it's just hard to say. I think some of it you just got to write off as, hey, this is a crazy world of football that we're in, and 2020's even made it more crazy.
Finally, let me ask you about the game last night, Niners and Rams. It's hard to figure the Niners. Their only wins this year had come over the hapless Giants and Jets. Jimmy Garoppolo had not played well. He was benched. Last night seems to all come together against a good opponent in the Rams. What flipped as you were watching that game last night?
Well, I think the thing that stood out for me the most was I think Kyle Shanahan did as good a job as any head coach in the league yesterday. He had a game plan that he used to manage the situations. He altered it a little bit. I don't think Garoppolo played great, that's for sure. But Kyle has a way to find plays, systems, schemes that work for him, for Jimmy. You know, they were able to manage some things at the right time. I think he protects Jimmy well. But again, the thing that stood out to me was the acronym of Kyle Shanahan and what a play caller he really is. Thought they did an outstanding job, especially for a team that, as we know, has been devastated by injuries since the season started. When you get in these division games like the Rams and 49ers last night, these teams know each other well. So they're always going to be closer than most predict. I thought last night, obviously, Shanahan got the best of McVay. You know, two good friends. They're going to have another battle later in the year. But I think these division games are fun to watch. And who knows what the 49ers are going to be by the end of the year. But I know anybody's capable of beating anybody within divisions.
Randy Mueller was the former GM of the Saints and the Dolphins, former NFL Executive of the Year. You can read more of his thoughts at MuellerFootball.com or on Twitter at @RandyMueller_@the_end. Randy, it's always fun to catch up. Thanks so much for doing it with us this morning.
Appreciate it. Have a good week.
You too. Randy Mueller joining us this morning here on the DA Show. Standing by with our headline this morning is our good friend and kind sir, Andrew Bogish. AB, what up?
DA, good morning one more time. Now, contrary to popular belief, the NLCS was not over at this time Friday. It also wasn't over when the Braves took 2-0 and 3-2 leads in Game 7 in Arlington last night. The Braves ran themselves out of a bigger lead in the fourth. Mookie Betts then kept them close by robbing Freddie Freeman of a homer in the fifth, and then Dodger Betts mostly did the rest.
Two balls, two strikes, two out. Martin's 23rd pitch, Bellinger with a fly ball to right field. Cody Bellinger has just given the Dodgers a 4-3 lead.
Charlie Steiner, Dodgers radio, Cody Bellinger's tie-breaking no-doubter followed a tying solo shot from pinch hitter Kike Hernandez in the previous inning. Bellinger, by the way, joins Yogi Berra as the only players with multiple go-ahead homers in a Game 7.
Wow.
The Dodgers won the NL last night 4-3. Julio Urias retiring the last 9 Braves that came up. Atlanta still hasn't reached the World Series now since 99, while LA goes back for the third time in 4 seasons, Game 1 with the Rays tomorrow night. What a difference a week made for the 49ers.
49ers 0-5 on fourth down this year. They've got trips to the left, single receiver right. Garoppolo takes the shotgun snap, back to pass, quick pass over the middle. That's caught, open space, 25-20, 15-10-5. George Kittle to the end zone. Touchdown, San Francisco.
That is Ryan Radke on Westwood 1. San Francisco on its way to a 21-6 halftime lead on the Rams. They got their first home win of the season, 24-16 on Sunday Night Football. Jimmy Garoppolo also threw TDs to Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk. The Bucs ran over the Packers 38-10. The Steelers beat up the Browns 38-7. The Bears held off the Panthers 23-16. And in the other controversial two-point conversion decision yesterday, the Texans lost in OT in Tennessee 42-36. Houston went for two with a 9-point lead in the final minutes. They didn't get it, allowing the Titans to tie the game with just 7 and then get that win in extra time. And then we have those Jets, 0-6 after a 24-0 loss in Miami. Frank Gore is too damn old for this.
I'm being real. It's tough, man. I'm sick of it, man. Like, I'm tired of us going in the film like, oh, we should have had this. Well, now we got to make
man,
it.
Man, if you didn't like Aaron Rodgers and Packer body language on the field yesterday, poor Frank Gore huddled behind the podium of the desk talking to this microphone, answering questions while his team is so bad.
What
a sin. I just
want
to hug the dude.
It's such a sin. He's so much better than this. This is like watching Jerry Rice retire for his final season of the 0-16 Lions. He's such a classy guy. He's such a fiery competitor. He's a future Hall of Famer, and he's stuck on this miserable train wreck of an organization. He deserves so much better than what he's getting.
And going to lose to his son in this bet they made of who has the most rushing yards this year. His son on FAU and him.
Frank Gore, he's still playing. Frank Gore is still playing in the NFL, and his kid is on FAU.
I believe
it's Frank
FAU,
Gore,
yes.
Frank Gore Jr.
And they mentioned this.
Oh, my God.
They mentioned this on
That's
the podcast.
That's amazing.
They have a bet this year going. Which one of them has more rushing yards? His son is and I think they're separated by like 20 yards, and Frank Gore's got to be telling himself, there's no Lev Bell here. Can I at least beat my own freaking son in a bet?
Frank Gore has played long enough to where his son is playing college football.
Yes.
And he plays running back. He's not like a punter. It's not like this is Ken Griffey Sr. where every so often he gets it as a DH. That's incredible. Wow.
Those Jets are trading nose tackle Steve McClendon to the Bucs for a 2022 sixth-round pick. And while the Saints may still play some games at LSU this season, it will not be this weekend against the Panthers. That game stays in the Superdome. Our Monday night doubleheader begins with the Bills and Chiefs at 5 Eastern. Then it's Arizona in Dallas at 8:15. Clemson and Alabama still atop the AP College Football Top 25 after impressive wins on Saturday. Georgia drops from 3rd to 4th for losing at Bama. Notre Dame goes from 4th to 3rd. And 0-0 Ohio State now complete the top 5 after North Carolina lost to FSU. The Columbus Crew and Orlando City clinched playoff spots in MLS last night. LAFC got a 1-1 draw at Portland when 16-year-old Christian Torres scored in the 93rd minute. And Doc Emrick is retiring after calling 22 Stanley Cups, almost 3,800 professional hockey games. Doc is in 7 different halls of fame, including the big hockey one, and that's been since 2008. DA, back to you.
Thanks, folks. Our toll-free line, 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. It is time for our Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service. At O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Ed tweets in, DA, what's your opinion on the Rams game last night? I'm a diehard fan, but was unsure about this team. How it would be going into the year? I still don't feel great about them. After last night, I'm thinking 8-8, maybe 9-7. Well, last night, I thought that they played worse than they were. I thought their 4-1 start of the season was a pretty good indicator that they had kind of eliminated some of the mistakes from last year, that Goff had been playing better football, that McVay had a better control over the offense, that the Rams were kind of legit again. And then last night, they just seemed to be put into a grinder. And I give the Niners credit. They had not played that well all season long. That was by far their best game. My worry was that it felt like the Rams had taken a step back last night. I thought they had taken a step forward the first couple of weeks from what they were last year. Last night was a step back. I thought the offense was stagnant. They kind of seemed out of sorts for most of the first half. Goff was scattershot. And I don't know what their identity is anymore offensively. McVay has this big brain. He can memorize a million different plays, but it feels like he doesn't quite know what they're supposed to be yet. And so I just, last night, defensively, they had a couple of big breakdowns, which led to big plays for the Niners. But offensively, we know the Rams are going to have to be dynamic offensively to win. This is what, when they're at their best, this is what they do. And they just, they can't create those big plays right now. At least they didn't last night. And that's a worry. I think the Rams are better than they showed last night. But I once again worry that they keep reverting back into a very predictable, uncreative, ineffective offense. And that's what happened last night. When we come back, we've got your advanced analytics and your epic fail. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
So the Jets right now are cruising to the number one pick overall after getting slapped around by the Dolphins yesterday. And our question is, if you want Trevor Lawrence as the number one pick in the draft, is it safer to keep Adam Gase employed until the end of the season? 77% of you say, yes, keep Adam Gase if you want the number one pick in the draft. Don't rock the ship here. Don't rock the boat. Once the Texans fired Bill O'Brien, they won a game. Once the Falcons fired Dan Quinn, they won a game. You don't want to ruin a good thing here. Keep losing. Keep Gase employed. The Jets right now have a 57% chance to earn that number one overall pick in the draft, according to ESPN Sports Analytics. Gase is one of three coaches to be shut out by a former team after the 24-0 shutout yesterday. Dennis Erickson was shut out in 04 by the Seahawks, and Ron Meyer in 87 with the Colts was shut out by the Patriots. Erickson had moved on to the 49ers by then. So earlier this morning, we found out that yesterday's Packers and Niners game was such a snooze fest that Mraz actually left the couch to go grab himself some ice cream during the game. And in doing so, happened to flip on this little thing called CBS Sports Radio. And he happened to learn for the first time since we debuted more than 8 years ago what the weekend programming is, which has been very stable and consistent. The same thing since 2013. It is your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Mraz left the couch on an NFL Sunday for the first time in 9 years to finally hear our programming. And the one thing that he heard when he was the host mistakenly saying that the Bucs beat the Saints.
Good All show. Right. What are you saying this morning, Chief?
That's a, you know, that's like Mike and Amanda or Jody Mackinac. That's a great Sunday show. That is, I mean, that combo, what better can you get?
And I'm going to be a crotchety old you-know-what if I last another 40 years.
You guys are all watching Red Zone. You got to get rid of Ack and Jody. They're taking you flying around. We got guys in Tampa. We got guys in Miami. Everything's happening.
You need to be listening to that because you didn't even know that they did the show. I did know that they did the show.
That's a power
and chose
couple.
Chose not to listen.
That's a power couple. That's a good Sunday. So there you go. Two blowouts, 4 o'clock window leads to crumb cake ice cream and apple pie, leads to Ack and Jody being discovered. That's a big late window of the NFL yesterday.
Rich Ackerman.
Let me tell you, if
Jody
ever,
finally discovered.
If there was ever a need for a afternoon drive tandem on some major affiliate somewhere,
Mac and Ack. Mac and Ack? You even got the name for the programming. Get this guy a PD job. He's thought about it. Mac and Ack. And by the way, one guy who can't stop coughing and the other guy who hates germs. That, to me, just throw it on TV as well.
The Odd Couple.
All right.
Perfect.
What's CBS Sports Network showing yesterday? Bull riding? Get those two on a camera all day shooting around.
That's right.
I'd love to see Mraz get smacked by sausage and peppers.
I don't want to blow your mind, but there used to be a show on satellite radio with Jody Mack and a guy named Brian McGovern, and they were the Mac and Mack Sports Attack.
Boom! Pop goes the Weasel.
Wow. There's a lot going on with that name.
Wow. Wow. Mac and Mack Attack.
4227
All right.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
So the first big outcome of yesterday's action was that Mraz actually, for the first time in a decade, got off the couch on a Sunday and left live football. The second big thing was the bet is apparently more alive than we thought. If the Patriots finish with a bottom three record of the NFL, I lose. If they finish with better than that, Mraz loses. And what's on the table, what's at stake, is us dressing up as an American Patriot with some type of Ben Franklin or Paul Revere costume, reading from a scroll, the script that the other person writes, and getting beaned by dodgeballs from a short distance. If it's really bad, like if the Patriots are outside of the top 10, I get to pour hot New England clam chowder on Mraz's head. Right now, after that dispiriting loss to the Broncos, the Patriots, by my rudimentary math, are the 11th pick in the NFL draft. The 11th. So they're just outside of the top 10. So once upon a time, it looked like they could be a top five team in the NFL. Right now, it looks like, again, they're right around the 11th pick of the NFL draft. Mraz, you're still alive. If Cam Newton looks that bad, and we saw what Jarrett Stidham looked like, you're still alive.
Right, and the Giants and Falcons appear back, so they're going to shoot up right there with a couple wins, have the Pats lose a little more. Suddenly things are breaking our way, D.A.
It's just hard for me to imagine that between the Jets, the Vikings, either Washington or the Giants, or whatever that Eagles team is, or the Jaguars, that you're going to find a bottom three spot for the Pats.
Injuries happen, DA. Injuries happen. A lot of football left.
That'll do it for us this morning here on the DA Show. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti, the Wheels of Steel and audio director. Thanks to Andrew Bogish. On your headlines, it's Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. be good to one another. Trash Tuesday tomorrow. We'll see you then. The Mothership disconnects.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.